Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. I'm back. And yes, I'm back in terms of we're releasing a show again because last week we did not. I took a break. And I think it's the second time maybe ever that I haven't released a show on the regular day. But there you have it. We took a week off. And I'm also back because I turned in the manuscript for book two. Now listen, everyone, it still needs a lot of work. A lot of work. That's why it takes a full year to turn in a book before they publish it. Like there's a full year span in there for editing, book covers, all the things. But at least the first draft is gone. And so in honor of that, I'm going to give you the top 5 things I've missed while I've been writing a book the last 4 or 5 months. Are you ready? I know nobody asked for this, but I will do it anyway. Number 5, I've missed books because there's no luxury of just reading whatever. And I don't even read. Y'all all know that. I'm an Audible girl. But it feels like when you're writing a book that you need to be listening to things that give you content. And so I miss just like for pleasure, whatever reading. That's number 5. Number 4, walking. And I'll tell you what, the exercise, well, you know, I got back into it. I've started this week and it's not pretty because when you stop walking, apparently everything creaks and groans and it's a whole situation. And this is how bad it's been. I went walking and they have torn down a house and partially built one a few streets over since the time that I've been walking. So there you go. Thank you for that. So I've missed going walking and exercising. Here's number 3. Did you notice I'm going 5, 4, 3, 2, 1? Okay. Number 3, I've missed organization. Now you're like, what does that even mean? I know, but I just miss the little things we do organizationally that we don't even know we do when we have time. But everything I touch at this moment is a mess. Like if you walk in my house, it looks clean, but then you open like the junk drawer where, you know, all the junk goes. And I'm like, what bomb went off in here? I look in my closet, my sweater area where I keep my sweaters. It's like everything's falling out. I miss the organizational pieces. Oh my gosh. Don't even start with the pantry. Oh my heavens. So I miss that. Number 2, I miss speaking. I said no to pretty much every speaking event for the fall into mid-spring because I knew that I was going to be writing a book and I have 2 kids graduating in a couple of months. So I said no to most things. I think maybe I have 1 or 2 before the school year ends, but that's it. So I've missed that. And so next year, I say next year, fall, that's new school year. So I think it feels like next year to me, I will be back at it. So yeah, if your church is looking for someone, you have events, I would love to come and speak. I am going to start booking dates again. I've taken a couple in the fall, but still have some availability. So I've missed speaking. And the number 1 thing I've missed is just seeing my friends and being able to go to lunch, to hang out, to go on walks, do the things. And so yay, back to the normal things. And I remember one time a friend told me when she was going through like a medical crisis, she's like, I miss the ordinary days. And I think that's my takeaway. I miss the ordinary. I miss listening to books and going on walks and keeping things organized in my house and, you know, speaking. That's not exactly ordinary, but something I love to do routinely. And then I miss my friends. So if today's an ordinary day, like relish in that because there's good in that and you'll miss it when you don't have it. Okay, you guys, Jim Burns is with us today. He is amazing and he has a huge ministry we're going to talk about. He has a new book out for teens on sexual integrity, and that's what we're talking about. And you guys know I'm super immature and I cannot talk about sexual integrity or anything. He uses a word in there or two that I'm like completely uncomfortable with. I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go. He's amazing. He's going to be on for 2 weeks. And next week, we're going to talk a little bit about marriage. We're also going to talk about empty nesting. And he's just like a national treasure, just been out there speaking to Christian families. And I just love him. So it's Dr. Jim Burns. And in honor of the fact we're talking about sexual purity, my daughter from college called a few minutes ago and asked if I was going to edit the podcast. There you go. That's behind the scenes. She's like, get on it. But I said, hey, I have a question. How'd I do on giving the talk, you know, the talk? And she paused for a minute. She's like, huh, I'm not sure there was one. And I was like, huh, that's not good. And then she said, I don't think it counts as a sex talk when you refer to the parts as your front bottom when you're speaking of it. And more to come on that front bottom. We talk about that in the podcast today. But yeah, that tells you how good I am at the talk, or as Jim Burns would say, the series of talks we have with our kids. But we're going to approach this just more philosophically, because we're hitting higher level. Most of us that are listening don't have little kids where we're starting from the beginning, but just how do we talk sexual integrity with our kids, teens, young adults, all that. So I'm thrilled he's here for 2 weeks. Let's kick it off with Dr. Jim Burns. Jim Burns, welcome to Mesmerized. How are you?
Hey, I've been looking forward to this since the last time I talked to you. So I'm so happy to see you and looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. I don't remember exactly. I meant to go back and listen, but I believe last time we had so much fun that then I decided I might move there and work for Homeward. but it hasn't happened, everybody. I'm still in Dallas. But
here's the question. Do you surf? Because, you know, we're right at Dana Point, which is one of the great surf spots in America. So you'd have to learn how to surf, Cynthia.
Never too old to learn, right? Maybe that's why I was moving. I love Homeward and all that you guys do, but I also do Dana Point. I mean, let's go. So
yeah, you got it.
Okay, so you were so kind to agree to do 2 weeks with us on Mesmerize.
Yes.
And so we're going to talk about sexual integrity. We're also going to talk about empty nesting. And so we're going to start week one with sexual integrity and talking just from a perspective of parents with kids. But I think this is only timely that I read this to you, because you don't know this, but people who listen to the podcast know this. I have my second book due in about 8 days. And you know how it is when the book's due, right?
Like, I can't believe you're talking to me in the middle of this.
Well, listen, I'm just glad you're talking to me, because I barely can form. I can't formulate a sentence anymore. But I wanted to read you something as we're going to talk sexual integrity that I thought you would appreciate, that's in the book that I thought you would laugh about. So are you ready?
Yep. Let's hear it.
This is the first chapter, by the way, everybody. The whole sex talk thing with our kids, it's dumb. I hate to come out swinging on such a dicey topic, but it must be said. There's virtually no conversation I shy away from. Deep, shallow, marginally inappropriate, oversharing, except for the talk. And honestly, the fact we have to slap the in front of this like some ominous warning label should tell us everything we need to know. There's no other subject in life that requires this level of verbal hazard lights. I go on from there. But all that to say, there's about four more paragraphs where I talk about bad I am at it. And in fact, I was so bad at it when my kids were little, I was not even comfortable with the right terminology. So I taught them, no kidding, Jim Burns, that it was the front bottom and the back bottom. Like, they probably need therapy, okay?
I have heard worse. I heard there was a 12-year-old boy who was calling his private part his wing-a-ding-ding. And his mother said, where'd you learn that? And he goes, Dad taught me.
Right.
So, yeah, that's great.
Then there sounds like there's a Yanoff running around Dana Point somewhere. And it sounds that way. But I just wrote a whole chapter. And talking about something completely different, but started off just laughing about how bad I am
so
at the sex talk.
Yeah. Hey, you know what's funny is I've been speaking on this for years. You know, I was a youth speaker, so I would do it to 250,000 kids a year, blah, blah, blah. My daughter, Christy, who's wonderful and opinionated, she said in front of the whole family, Dad thinks he does a good job with the stuff on sex, and he does when he's talking to other people. But for us, talking about my three daughters, and as if all of them agreed, with us, his bald head sweat, his ears turn red, and he stuttered a whole lot. So anyway, I think you and I are in the same team. Yeah, right. Well, it's just awkward. I mean, it's awkward. It is
so awkward. And here's the thing about it is I don't know anybody who thinks they did it well. I really don't. And I know we know all the right stuff. Like, I know, like, it's not one conversation. It's an ongoing dialogue. I know that we want them to hear it from me, not from someone else. Although I personally would like them to hear it from someone else. I don't even care who at this point. But I say all of this because love that you've written a book on sexual integrity in our kids, because we can all agree probably that we hate having the talk or the series of talks, but I think we can also agree that in today's culture, it's more necessary than ever because we have a culture fighting directly against everything we know to be biblically true.
No, I think you're exactly right. And so, you know, I think we just admit it in the beginning of the book that we're going to talk about. The first chapter is called Awkward, and it's awkward for the kid. I'm writing that book to a kid, but it's also awkward for the parents because most parents, I was in your lovely neck of the woods, at least Texas, 2 weeks ago. I was in Austin. I asked people, how many of you received good, positive, healthy sex education when you were growing up? This is to a very large group in Austin, one of those big mega churches. And I had four people raise their hand.
Wow.
And so I just made a joke and said, your pastor is going to be doing a sex ed for adults because so many of you didn't. But, you know, all research shows, and this is what's important for moms and dads to hear, is that all research shows that the more positive, value-centered sex education kids get from home, even though we're awkward and we do it weird and we say front, bottom, and back bottom. I'm always going to remember that, by the way, on you, Cynthia.
Of course
I'm going to remember
that. Feel free to use it.
But when we have those conversations, the less promiscuous and the less confused.
Yeah.
So you want to be the safe person, especially in today's culture, because the number one place they're getting sex education is from the internet. Mm-hmm. Well, I love the internet. I use the internet. You and I are using an internet. But the truth is, it's not the place to probably – TikTok is not going to help our kids make good and right and wise decisions about a very important issue in their life.
Yeah, absolutely. So you wrote this book, and by the way, everybody, we'll link it everywhere, but Sexual Integrity in Our Kids, and it's a student's guide to sexual integrity. I'm curious, I read somewhere in some of the stuff that I've read about you recently saying that you talk about how we need to change the narrative. I'm talking about sexual integrity.
Right.
What respect does a narrative need to change?
Well, you know, I think I've been at this long enough where I watched the narrative just be silent. You know, the church was silent, parents were silent, and so, you know, people grew up not having any kind of insight from the church or kids or from their parents. What was interesting about that was whoever is the safe person they'll go to. So when my parents didn't talk to me, when I had questions as a teenager, I didn't go to them. Yeah. It wasn't that I hated them or whatever. They weren't safe because they hadn't talked to me. So what I'm saying is, and you mentioned this, I would rather have 100 one-minute conversations that could even be goofy than one 100-minute conversation. Now it's done.
Yeah.
So, you know, so again, the point being is the narrative was during that time was silence. Now, a lot of people who went through the purity culture heard anyway, I hope they didn't say it, but churches started doing this a little bit. And I'm sorry for this, but they said, don't do it. It's dirty, rotten, horrible. Save that dirty, rotten, horrible, ugly thing until you're married, and then it's going to be great. So, you know, I do marriage conferences, and I have these people saying, you know, my mom said it was dirty, rotten, and ugly. I still think it is, and I've been married for 15 years, and, you know, I can't get past the tapes in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So the narrative is lead with love, practice kindness, help kids understand from even the youngest age that they were created in the image of God, that God created male and female. He sees it as good. There's a master designer to our bodies, and there's a master designer to our souls and our life. And it's not culture. The master designer is God. So I've told people with this new book that it's one of the most important books I've ever read. I've also say it's one of the most spiritual books, but it's not preachy. So the narrative is it didn't work so well. We have people who have been in deconstruction and leaving the church because they felt like they were getting shamed to death. And I hope and pray to God that I was never a part of that in my youth ministry days because I spoke a lot about it to kids all over this country and the world. But I honestly feel like we can change the narrative and still keep the biblical worldview and make it kinder, softer, more beautiful at a time in our culture where kids are all confused about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you take 13, 14-year-old girls and guys, what they have heard on TikTok and YouTube. Now, I think TikTok's kind of fun, and I like YouTube, but I don't like the narrative that they're using, and I don't like the narrative that we did in the church in terms of trying to shame people and to make it happen. That didn't work. It caused more drama and trauma. So far, we're getting really good response on this going, hey, you guys – you know, kind of some dude, some guy just wrote me and said, dude, you changed the narrative. Good job. And I was like, I think that's a compliment. I'll take it as a compliment.
I think that is a compliment. In that chapter I read a little bit of to you guys a second ago, I wrote about how one of the pastors at our church told me a story. It's funny now, but it really isn't. But about how when he was in youth group, he's about my age, the youth minister, because parents like me weren't willing to talk about anything. So the youth minister's like, well, I better take one for the team. And so he got a white flower. I'd never heard of this. Maybe you have. And they passed it around the whole circle and all the kids attached it and all that. And by the end, the white rose was like totally, you know, dilapidated and dirty and gross. And he held it up and he's like, this is what happens if you have sex before marriage. And I had never heard that, but I was like, well, now that's horrible. And I was, we were laughing. We were kind of laughing about it. I said, my kids would be like, if wait till marriage, wait on what? My mom hadn't even told me what we're doing. So it would have been a whole thing for my children. But I guess my question would be this. Of course, there's logistics when we're having the sex talk or the series of sex talks with our kids. But I'm curious for most people that are listening to this podcast that probably have a little bit older kids. Let's assume kids that probably know the logistical side of things. What's the narrative we want to share with them? Let's talk, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade, going up those years. What's the narrative around it that we really want to be working towards?
Yeah, well, I think actually there's a lot of narrative. And one of the narratives would be to the kids who are thinking maybe they're you know, going to change genders or they're struggling with different, you know, gender identity experience. I mean, when I first started talking on this, it was like 2%. Today it's up to 25. When I got my PhD in England, I studied gender dysphoria and we looked at young boys who were 8, you know, maybe 6, 8. And we didn't even hear about girls. Today, it's the girls who are 13, 14. It's the same girls, frankly, who were cutting themselves or having eating disorders. And nobody thought that was a good idea. But today they're getting embraced for some of their decisions. So part of that narrative is don't rush it. And some parents will hate me for saying this because I'm just saying don't rush it. You know, work through this. But then also I think they need to learn what I call a theology of healthy sexuality. We can talk about that later. But I would just simply say the Bible, to me, he's the master designer. If he's the master designer, then he has things in the Bible for us to learn. He's not the great killjoy, by the way, as you well know, because if you're married, I mean, he created pleasure. He created the beauty of being one flesh, all these kind of things. So, you know, he's not the great killjoy that we've made him out to be. And sometimes the church has because we did goofy things like that youth pastor. Now, I'm going to say about that youth pastor who did the little flower thing, because I've heard that lots of times. You know, he probably meant well. What he didn't know is he was probably destroying some of the kids. And actually, I think you even talk to, I think some guys can take it differently than young women. So in the purity culture, it was the women who got hit, the young women who got hit so hard because they blew it. And then they went, okay, God doesn't even love me, and so I'm not going to go to the church. You know, junior high and high school, kids start having experiences. And they're so freaked out by thinking that God now hates them that we don't realize this. We think it's a faith crisis or something else. They're not going because they, you know, touched a person in an improper way or, you know, they had this experience. And so I think we have to be very careful. That doesn't mean that there's not a sin factor, that God has a plan. We follow God's plan. We're going to be much better off. But, you know, I'm kind of going off the, you know, side here, but and kind of standing on my little preaching pulpit, but I really do think that there's a way for us to have that conversation. And so even when I wrote the book, you know, A Student's Guide to Sexual Integrity, I went, what do I want to say to my 9-year-old? This isn't just for 9-year-olds. It wouldn't be for a 9-year-old, but I have a 9-year-old grandson and I go, I'm going to write it to him. I'm going to be funny. It's going to be cool, but it's going to be unapologetically Christian without being preachy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what we do with our kids. Yeah. And those conversations, and, you know, the one talk, you know, one talk wonders. Studies show it in Columbia University that if you have the one talk, it doesn't do much at all. If you have those 100 one-minute things, well, you know, I can talk for a minute about this. And so the sex talk becomes even the way we do the narrative, not just the narrative, but the way we do it. So I tell parents the best thing to do is you're watching TV and something goofy is on and you put the pause on and go, hey, what do kids at school think about that? Now you're not putting it on them. You're talking about, well, what's going on at school? Oh, my gosh, there is this kid. And then they go off talking and now they feel comfortable talking to you. So you know what my opinion would be if I knew that kid? I'd probably say this and boom, all of a sudden now you have a conversation going without really feeling like most kids have said to me that they felt like their parents just preached and lectured to them.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
when they finally got to the point, well, what about you, mom? What about you, dad? They went, well, blah, 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 blah. You know, they didn't know what to say because they hadn't followed this.
Right.
So, you know, it was even more, you know, kind of detrimental to the kid to go, well, they're telling me to do this, but they didn't do it. And so
yeah.
I think that's where we can be more honest. I don't think you have to say every, you know, war story of your, but if, you know, if the kid asks, they will, you're talking about older kids, they will. Sometimes, what about you? You say, you know what, the reason I have passion so much for this, because I didn't always do it right.
Yeah.
So my passion, but you don't have to go through, you know,
the
every
details.
Detail.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny in our house, like my kids have coined a phrase I say a lot apparently, and I didn't know I said it, but I actually don't hate it now that they mock me for it. But I mean, they mock a lot of things and I wish
same family. We have the same family.
But it's fine, everyone. We're a very sarcastic family.
Yeah.
But, you know, whenever we would see something on TV or whatever, I would just in passing, if we weren't going to have a full conversation, I would just say, man, that's not God's best for them. Whatever it was, that's not God's best for them. And it's funny because my kids now, you know, if something will be on the TV or the other day they had on music and there was a cuss word in it, and one of my kids in the back goes, that's not God's best for them. And so the truth of the matter is just reminding them that God does have the best.
Sure.
And this isn't it. And even my daughter's boyfriend, she's in college, we chuckled the other day, I don't remember, something came up and he texted her and she sent me a screenshot and it said, tell Cynthia this is not God's best for them.
I just love that
little things that stick with them. And you know, I feel like as they're older, and tell me if you disagree with this, but as they get to a certain age, high school, definitely college, where they know where you stand on everything by that point. They just little tidbits and reminders. They don't really need the full lecture again. They know where you stand.
No. I think we make the mistake by overpowering them with that full lecture. You know, I said to a woman last week, I was doing a marriage conference for Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, and she came to me, and her daughter had gone off the rail as a college student. And I said, does she know what you believe? Yeah, of course she does. Does she know how you feel? Mm-hmm. Okay. Then now, keep the relationship, keep safe, but I don't think you need to keep being a one-topic mom.
Yeah.
So she knows what you believe. And, you know, I had this thing, though, when you said that's not God's best for them. I just saw yesterday a little clip from Shark Week, and a shark, you know, there was a surfer, and the shark, you know, kind of took a stab at the surfer. And I just thought in my head, well, that's not God's best for him.
That's really not for either one of them. It's really not.
No. The shark didn't probably like biting the surfboard either. But anyway, there you go.
Exactly right.
You know, as we digress.
That's the story of my life is digressing, so feel free. We talk a lot about, and we know a lot about pornography and the impact it's had. And, you know, I say this often. I know you feel the same way. Like, listen, I'm raising the first generation of kids who've had all that access in their hand. I mean, I remember in the days, everybody, when you would drive to another town and out in the outskirts, there'd be a building with no windows and some seedy cars out front. And that was the pornography stop. And now the pornography stop is sitting in my hand on my desk and my kids, right?
There it is, right there.
And so we're all working through this. And so I do feel like we have this guilt, like, oh, I didn't put enough safeguards, or I didn't, you know, all the things. But at the end of the day, I think we're learning, we're growing. I would just ask this though. When it comes to pornography and the way that it skewed sex and our kids having a healthy sexual identity, what's the comeback to that? Like conversations, obviously, but what do you say to your high school son who 9 out of 10 times has seen pornography in some form or fashion?
Right.
Like, what do you say?
Well, high school son, you're going to have to say it differently because he's seen it often, because the average kid sees it at age 10, average boy. But the average girl, it was 14, and next thing you look up, you can Google me on this, but it's 11.8 months.
Mm. Yeah.
11 years, 8 months. And so this is their first look at sexuality. It's probably the first time anybody's talked to them about it if their parents aren't talking to them about it. So if you know that your son is watching it, or even your daughter now, in terms of different things, because the women thing is the bigger deal now, we're all like, what happened here? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, I think you this is your chance. You know what, babe? It's not this, because that's fake intimacy. It's this, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And let's just talk about it. So you use the negative experience that they had. But it wasn't all that negative for them, because, man, you get a dopamine drop, which is the pleasure hormone, just like somebody does if they're, you know, on their honeymoon. So, you know, they're getting that kind of a drop. So you have to say, but that's fake intimacy. This is real. And then that's your chance to begin to, you know, put together the beauty of a relationship that has sexual integrity in it, and the beauty of a long-term physical intimate relationship in marriage, and why that is so much better. The interesting side to it, Cynthia, is that, you know, even the secular world has to say that, you know, sexuality and the sexual experience is better when people are married, when they feel safe, when they feel emotionally safe, when they feel physically safe. That's not the case with a lot of kids. So, you know, but I think you use that experience. So I tell parents, don't freak out. Our initial thing is freak out, take the computer, break it. I know a dad who took a computer. It was a Mac. It cost $2,000. And he, you know, he broke it. And then he went, that was the dumbest thing I've ever. That was a $2,000, right? But I get it. But scream and shout at the pillow in your bedroom. But this is the time to actually say, you know what? It's kind of normal and natural. Most people are seeing it. However, let me tell you what's a lot better. And now you use that as a opportunity to talk with them about the things that you and I are talking about that we want to talk about.
It's not God's best for you.
Not God's best.
Hey, feel free to use that, Jim, when you're talking, you know, all over the country. I mean, say my name, but you know, it's real novel.
No, I love that. I'm gonna say that. I'm telling you.
Tell us about the theology of healthy sexuality, which you kind of
referenced
earlier.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Earlier.
No, I referenced it, but you know, I don't think most people understand that. You know, the word theology is just simply the study of God, and sexuality is, of course, our sexuality. But it's all, you know, by our sexuality, especially when you see it in scripture, is much more about your body and how you treat others and all that. So you're broadening the definition of sexuality to make it the right definition as opposed to doing it, right? So, you know, God created sex. These are things in the Bible. God created sex and he said it was very good. He created male and female. This is very good. I mean, he has guardrails. Nobody's going to suggest that this is a bad idea. Don't commit adultery. Now, you might have to explain to your child what that means. He also talks about, there's a Greek word that's in it a lot when it talks about sexuality, and it's called immorality, and it says flee from sexual immorality. That's 1 Corinthians 6:18. Flee from sexual immorality, 1 Thessalonians 5. And what I hear God saying is flee from it. Don't flee from sex and sexuality and marriage. Flee from immorality. Mm-hmm. And so there is, so yeah, he does that. But he also says you're one flesh. That Jesus spoke to that in Matthew 19. But then he also says honor God with your body. And so a sexual, when you start talking about a theology of sexual integrity, honor God with your body. Renew your mind for good. These are all scriptures. Turn your eyes from worthless things, right out of Psalm 119, and then guard your heart. Are we teaching our kids to guard their heart? You know, the Bible says in Proverbs 4:23, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. So even people who have said, well, my parents talked to me. They gave me a book I read about biology. Well, maybe the parents, they did a lot better than a lot of the parents, but, and I appreciate that.
No, but better than me.
Do we teach our kids to learn how to guard their heart? Mm-hmm. Because I think I was talking to a bunch of young moms, so they all had younger kids, and I asked them how many of you received. Well, there were like 10 in a big group. Okay, mm-hmm. So they were doing better because they were younger and their parents had figured it out a little bit. But still, 10 out of a couple hundred. But the interesting side to it is, I said, how many of you were taught how to guard your heart? And, you know, they didn't raise their hand. And I think that, again, that the way you were talking about it, it's the perfect way when you teach them how to do that more spontaneous. I call it planned spontaneity. So Kathy and I would go away every 6 months. When I say go away, we'd actually drive down to the beach. And we'd sit there and we have a little yellow notebook and we take all of our three girls. What do we want to talk about? Education, about faith, about sex education, listing going on. And then we'd look for ways to have those conversations. So, yeah, and there were times when I didn't. I remember a time we were talking about, she said, I think we should probably talk even with the girls about masturbation. I'm like, that's your job, Kathy. She didn't say yes. We were watching a television show and it's just with our oldest daughter who was at that age where we probably need to have that conversation, which is going to be awkward. Mm-hmm. And Kathy just takes the little clicker, puts it on pause and looks to me.
Oh my gosh.
Here's your chance.
Here you go.
And so I said, what do you think about that? And Christy goes, about what? She totally had missed it. Now it's awkward. We go, well, actually, here's what they were talking about. You know what? We laugh about that, but we ended up having a great conversation with Christy. And it was a 3-minute conversation because she was like, can we get back to the show?
Yeah.
So, you know, but it ended up being a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting when you're saying honor, you know, honor God with your body. We are unabashed, more of, some of us more than others, about talking about honoring it well with food and what you put in and out of your body, yeah. right? And the amount of sleep. Right. We're obsessed right. with how much sleep our kids, like all these things. Like this is a natural lead into all the other things too, right? Is to have a sexual integrity discussion, because if we're going to be that bent on making sure our kids eat the right things or don't use a certain deodorant because it might have chemicals, by all means, like let's honor our body in all respects.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's hard because, you know, I had girls, so I can remember having a conversation with my daughter, Becca, who bought on her own money a swimsuit that I was like, there are going to be kids at our church who are going to see that in there. And so I actually had a conversation, and some people can disagree with me on this. I had a conversation with Becca, and I said, I want to buy that swimsuit, and I want to take you to go buy a swimsuit. Now, I wanted, do you have swimsuits that go to the top of your neck down sure. to your past your knees?
Sure.
They
uh-huh.
didn't. And in fact, when Kathy saw the second swimsuit that I had paid for, because I bought a swimsuit, I said, how much was that? I had no idea. She goes, $160. I go, you're kidding me. So that was after I'd already said.
That's more expensive than the swimsuit.
Exactly. So then she buys another one. It was a little less, but not much. So you know, this is my $300 swimsuit. And Kathy said, you know, that swimsuit doesn't have much more cover than the previous one, but it does have a little bit more. But, you know, that Becca didn't say to me, she was 16 years old. She didn't say to me, Dad, you're the most amazing guy in the world. She goes, Dad, I really like that swimsuit. I said, well, you can wear that swimsuit. We have a pool at our house. I said, you can wear the swimsuit at our pool, but that's kind of it.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't get her saying, you're the most amazing guy. I got eye rolls. But today, now she's in her 30s. My kids are in their 30s, my girls. And they all kind of go, you know what, Dad, you were a lot more right than you were wrong on some of this. But I had to be careful not to make that too ugly of a thing. Because again, if you're going to change the narrative, you still stay strong on certain things, but you have to do it in a nicer, kinder, gentler way. And there were just times, like with Becca on that one, I just said, this is kind of a parenting principle, but I just said, I feel your pain. I understand. But nevertheless, as long as you're in our house, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Our whole family was in Hawaii a month or, you know, another few months ago. And I laughed because Becca had on the most modest swimsuit of anybody.
Everybody,
and I'm like, that was not what she wanted to do in 16. I get it. And I'm not saying it was just because of me, but we have to be careful.
Yeah. I get that. Let's talk about, as our kids start dating relationships, any thoughts on conversations to have? Let's say maybe, I mean, some date early, but let's talk like literally dating. You're not dating in seventh grade, everybody, because you're not going anywhere. You can't even drive. But let's just talk about like in high school. Maybe some of our kids are, you know, early college, they're really starting to date. Any advice on just how to kind of walk that road with them?
Yeah, no, I think it's good to have that conversation. And again, as they get older, sometimes if you've never had a conversation with your 17-year-old, and let's talk about dating and sex, they're going to go, okay, Mom, Dad, what do you want to know? I mean, because, you know, they've had the conversation, right? But I think it's good to have those kind of conversations with them. And again, we felt like for our kids that dating was something that they earned with responsibility. Mm. And so you have inclusive dating and exclusive dating. And we talk about this in the book. But inclusive dating is when three girls and four boys go and get something to eat and, you know, have some fun and whatever. They're relating. And even when you said seventh grade, they don't date, that is true. But it's kind of scary that some parents drop the kids off at the movies and then come back and get them and things like that.
Yeah,
because it shows that if they do that kind of thing, that the kids are, their engines start, you know, going. And the kids who at age 12 who have been on dates, exclusive dates, there's a 80%+ chance that they're going to have sex by the time they graduate from high school. I'm not saying on that date with the seventh grader. But so I think there are some things, and I think we do have some boundaries. And I think, look, at now that you're going to start dating, here's, you know, in our house, you have boundaries for everything else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's some boundaries, here's some suggestions from us, and then here's some boundaries. Mm-hmm. And as long as you know, go by these boundaries, and there's going to be some great circumstances, but some of the circumstances are going to be, and consequences are going to be bad if, you know, you go against that, if you come home late on curfew or things like that.
Yeah. You know, we've told our kids that we've said, you know, the same thing everyone, a lot of people probably say, but like, this is probably someone else's wife or husband. And so we want people to leave better than they came into the relationship with us. And we've also, I've seen this a lot. We've been willing to be the bad guy to say, like, the things you're asking to do are not bad, but we're going to save some things that you're going to do with the relationship. And I don't mean in a sexual sense, but even in a travel sense,
or even
whatever the things are, there's just some things that we're like, listen, we don't have to do everything that you can possibly do by 17.
Okay, so Cynthia, I'm giving you the gold star, the homeward gold star. You can wear it on your lapel. The reason is because even things like a lot of parents allow boy-girl stayovers where they're not literally in the bedroom together. They could be sneaking some things. And I don't think that's a good idea. And I don't think it's a good idea because every kid's going to go have sex. I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that you wait on, those kinds of things. And so, yeah, sometimes you have to be the bad guy. And no is a sign of love. But don't expect your kids to go, thank you so much. I understand totally why you're doing this. Sometimes you just have to say no because, you know, that's what we stand for. And when you get to be an adult, you can choose to do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. We always say, and I've said it before on the podcast, we always say, listen, nobody is more for you than your dad and I are. And so we may be getting it wrong. We may be getting it right. I don't know, but you can be assured it's prayed for and nobody's more for you. And you know, and so at the end of the day, what can they say to that? Like, listen, we're your biggest advocates and champions, and we could be getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure we're not, but either way it's prayed over. And I mean, I haven't found that my kids, I mean, they roll their eyes and get mad, but there isn't really a response to that. And it allows us to reinforce love to them in the midst of the no.
You know what? And even when you say that, and sometimes it's better to say it not in the heat of the battle, because then they take that as preaching or something. But, you know, like I've got a little 4.5-year-old grandson, Huxley, and I showed him the other day. I have a prayer journal. I pray every day in my little journal and I write names and I write his name down every day. And so I showed him one time. I said, you know what, Papa Jay, do you know what that says? And he didn't. And I said, that says Huxley. He's just learning. I said, that says Huxley. So, and I pray for you every day. Well, you know, he's 4.5. What does that mean to him? Then he comes back the next week or a week after that. They live about 1.5 hours from us. And he comes back and he goes, where's Huxley? And I'm like, you're right here, buddy. He goes, no, where's Huxley? And he goes into my backpack, pulls out my little prayer journal and wants me to show him Huxley. Well, when our kids know that, whether they be 4.5 or whether they be 16, when you're saying you are prayed for, I think that gives them security.
Yeah.
And even the word sexual integrity, I mean, integrity, the Bible says that the person of integrity walks securely. But I also think that if their parents have integrity and even prayer integrity and things like that, that the kids will feel safety as well. The person who walks in integrity feels safe. That's Proverbs 10:9.
Yeah.
But the safety part happens when they know that their parents are praying for. And, you know, all my girls now, I mean, they bumped in college and they were goofy. But as they come back, they'll say, hey, Dad, pray for me today. I've got a big, you know, thing that's going on. Dad, pray for me. You know, Mom, will you, you know, pray because Matt's going through this, you know, son-in-law or whatever. Well, beautiful. That's I'm honored to do that. And I think that gives them some security. And it also helps them realize that, no, this is the real deal that we're talking about here.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the book is called A Student's Guide to Sexual Integrity. And there is so much. We talked a lot of philosophy, but there is a lot of nuts and bolts and details and everything you need in this book by Jim Burns. And what are the ages that you're recommending for it?
Well, I actually started thinking about 10 years old. I don't think every mom and dad should go out and buy it for that. I think they need to look at the book first.
Yeah.
But the reason I said 10 is because if they see pornography at age 10, it's you now have to talk about sexual systems and things like that. I had a younger teen in mind, and I'm blown away because we've had this book out now for a couple of months. I'm blown away that college students are using it. We have an incredible course that goes along with it. You never see my face. You don't want to see a grandpa talking to the 13-year-old girl about, you know, sex. So we're using student workers who are out of Atlanta, just doing a great job. It's so creative. And anyway, the beauty of it is that it kind of I'm looking at those teen years, can go a little lower. England now calls 10 years old teens, which is crazy, all the way up into the, you know, latent teen years. So I'm excited about the book.
I'm so excited. All right. Well, we're going to be back next week. I'm going to tell you, everybody, the first question I'm going to ask him was the last one I was going to ask today, but we're out of time. But I want to talk first and foremost on our next one about how our marriages impact our kids' views on sexual integrity. And this is not Everyone, stay tuned. This doesn't come from a place of guilt. We're all going to feel horrible. But just a good reference point to consider what's the message we're sending. So that'll be my first question next podcast. Thanks for being here.
Great to be with you.
All right, friends, how much do you love Jim Burns? He's amazing. Come back next week as we are going to talk about empty nesting. We're going to talk a little bit about marriage, and I'm going to make fun of him for using the word lover because that's everything I stand against. And so, thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You're the very best. Oh, and leave a review. Thanks, guys.